I don't know what to make of that, except that he projects that onto Lancelot. White also did the very bizarre thing of doing falconry, that's training a falcon to fly for you, using the medieval methods rather than modern methods, which are a lot easier. The medieval method of training a falcon is to sit on a stool and stare at it until it falls asleep, no matter how many days this takes. And White did this with falcons. Nowadays, they use conditioning methods and it works much better. But White actually read the Latin treatises on hawking and trained falcons this way. He was a superb Latinist. In addition to the Once and Future King, Mistress Mesham's Repose, and England Have My Bones novels, he also translated the Latin medieval bestiary as a book of beasts, and it's still used today. It's a very good and accurate and poetic translation. White's other great achievement was to make the Middle Ages, which have stereotypically been called the Dark Ages, which were seen as some kind of interregnum between the great classical period and the great Renaissance period, White made the Middle Ages beautiful in his book, more than anyone has done before or since, even more than Tolkien, since Tolkien's work takes place in Middle Earth and not in the historical Middle Ages. And I could read page after page of T.H. White showing what medieval scholars know about how beautiful the Middle Ages, but I'll just pick one particular small one here. The world had been expected to end in the year 1000, and in the reaction which followed its reprieve, there had been a burst of lawlessness and brutality which had sickened Europe for centuries. It had been responsible for the doctrine of might, which was the Round Table's enemy. The fierce lords of the strong arm and hunted the wild woodlands, only, of course, there had always been exceptions like good Sir Ector of the Forest Sauvage, till John of Salisbury had been forced to advise his readers, "If one of these great and merciless hunters shall pass by your habitation, bring forth hastily all the refreshment you have in your house, or that you can readily buy or borrow from your neighbor, that you may not be involved in ruin, or even accused of treason." But then, White goes on, here's how the Middle Ages had changed. There were urbane abbots, tip-tupping along on ambling palfreys in furred hoods, which were against the rules of their orders, and yeomen in smart tackle with hawks on their fists, and sturdy peasants quarreling with their wives about new cloaks, and jolly parties going out to hunt without armor of any sort. Some were riding to fairs as great of that as Troy, others to universities which rivaled Paris, where there were 20,000 scholars, whose ranks eventually provided 7 popes. In the abbeys, all the monks were illuminating the initial letters of their manuscripts with such a riot of invention that it was impossible to read the first page at all. Those who were not doing the Cairo page were carefully copying out the Historia Francorum of Gregory of Tours, or the Legenda Aurea, or the Jeu d'Echecs Moralis, or a treatise of hawking, that is, if they were not engaged upon the Ars Magna of the magician Lully or the Speculum Majus by the greatest of all magicians. In kitchens, the famous cooks were preparing menus, which included for one course alone ballock broth, caudal fairy, lampreys and gelatine, oysters and civet, eels and sorbet, baked trout, brawn and mustard, numbles of a heart, pig's farce, and so on and so on. White just had a great feel for the Middle Ages, and he emphasized the romance and the beauty in a tradition where the darkness and the horror had always been emphasized before.